Stay tuned. Arts Live and Local is coming up. I'll be your host, Cindy Price, sitting in for Carol Newman today. Please stay tuned. Well, again, I'm Cindy Price. I'm sitting in for Carol Newman today on Arts Live and Local. This Saturday is Second Saturday Arts Walk throughout downtown Astoria from 5 to 8 p.m., and so we have a full palette of visual artists with us in studio today. With the 14th annual All Naturel exhibit at the Clatsop College's Royal Nebaker Gallery, we'll be talking with Hank Pander, Robert Paulman, Kristen Schock, and David Savinaugh. Shelby Silver is here. Her exhibit is at the AVA Gallery. And we'll also be talking with Chilean artist and educator Cecilia Araneda, and her woven depictions will be at Street 14. Well, I want to welcome first to the studio Hank Pander, artist Robert Paulman, founder of the All Naturel exhibit, Kristen Schock from the Royal Nebaker Gallery at the college, and a new art gallery assistant, David Savinaugh. Welcome, everyone, to Arts Live and Local. Thanks for being here today.
Hi, Cindy.
Thank you.
So, Kristen Schock, since you are the gallery director as well as an instructor, could you just tell us what this exhibit is about? Tell us when it opens, and I know that there are awards. If you could tell us, just give us the whole rundown. Start from the beginning and tell us everything.
Oh, absolutely. So this is our 14th consecutive year to hold the show. It's an international show. We put out a call. Anyone in the world can submit work. The focus is the human form. We had over 500 images submitted this year. We have a different judge every year. This year, we invited Hank Pander. Many of you are familiar with him. He loves Astoria, internationally known artist. He did a fantastic job selecting the work this year. It's been up on the walls, the show, since the 23rd of January, and will be continuing on through March 12th. We're excited to have our big reception on the 20th, so I hope everyone will come up for that.
I just had an opportunity to take a swing through this afternoon. It's really quite stunning, as it is every year. Thank you so much for bringing this to Astoria. What made you think about this and do this?
Well, you know, when I first came to Astoria, the faculty all contribute to the shows in the gallery that kind of tie into what we're teaching. And since I teach life drawing and I didn't really know anyone in the community or the region yet, I thought, well, we'll do a call for artists. And so we jumped in. Royal Nebaker, he served as our first judge and really helped us get it off the ground. So,
was there ever or has there ever been any concern from the college about the fact of having so many nudes on the walls?
Actually, not from the administration. And sometimes some factions of the community sometimes have some concerns about that. Mm-hmm. But the administration has always been enormously supportive. I feel so thankful for that. And once we educate people on the purpose and history of the show, I think they pretty much understand.
Right. It's really quite beautiful and also quite varied. Mr. Pander, let's bring you in just for a moment here. You were one of the jurors for this show. How many pieces did you look at?
I was the only juror.
The only juror. So you had a big job.
And I had, there was like 519 pieces, actually, and it had to happen in a relatively short period of time. And this whole selection process nowadays goes over a program called CAFE. And CAFE is most, I think, public art and art proposals go through this particular kind of program, which is formulated in a certain kind of way. And so images come in, and they're no bigger than like maybe 6 by 6 inches on a computer monitor. And so before I started, I mean, I'm really flattered that I was asked to do this. And I just, I'm really kind of excited about it. But I was also really quite intimidated by it because I thought, oh, gee, like 519 works and I have to select an exhibition out of that and it comes over the whole world and all that. How in the world am I going to do? I was just kind of like taken aback by it, actually, although I've juried shows before.
And also, Hank Pander, you were the winner in 2017 or 2015
in this exhibit. Yeah, I won twice, I think.
Yes.
So could you tell us? I'm familiar with it. And I really love Astoria. To me, Astoria is kind of, I sort of joke about it, it's my New York. It's like the city on the West Coast in the mouth of the Columbia River. I think it's just wonderful out here.
There were some people who had that vision. I don't know if you've seen the postcard of the Manhattan of the West. If not, I'll find it for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Hank Pander, could you tell us some about your extraordinary background? And you are originally from Holland.
From the Netherlands.
The Netherlands.
Yeah. Holland is a province of the Netherlands.
Really? Is that the way it goes? The Netherlands. Yeah. So how did you get here? How did you get involved with the All Naturel exhibit? Oh. And tell us a little bit about your background as well.
It's a long story for this little program.
We've got a few minutes.
Well, I years and years and years ago, in like 63, I met a young woman in Amsterdam who was an American, and we developed a relationship, and eventually we got married, and I moved. She was from Portland, and so we decided I didn't know how to go. She wanted to have me meet her dad and all that, so I'd come out here. And in order for me to stay here, I had to figure out a way I could, you know, afford to be here in a way. But I've graduated from the Rijksakademie van Beeldende Kunsten, the State Academy of Fine Arts. I was just well educated. And so I met like a artist in Rome by the name of Mike Russo, who was a well-known artist here locally. And through his help, in a way, I got a teaching position at the then Museum Art School, now PNCA. And then, you know, in his marriage, we had two children and stuff, Jakob and Arnold, who are well-known artists in their own rights. And so I ended up here, basically. It wasn't really my plan to become an American, but somehow I just ended up here.
Well, your art is often compared to Dutch masters, and in fact, I think you've been called a Dutch master. Do you still consider yourself a Dutch painter, or have you evolved into an American painter?
Yeah,
and how did
I think
that
the
happen?
Whole Dutch master thing is a little bit over my head, but. Well, yeah, I was educated in the Netherlands. I come out of a really well-known artist family, actually. There's probably about 11 working artists in my family. My father was an artist. There's the greatest Dutch sculptor in the turn of the 19th to the 20th century. It was Pieter Panter. There's a museum in his work. So I really grew up in the Dutch art world, and then I went to a really good school out there. So obviously, I was, and when I came here, I was fully formed. So, you know, I didn't all of a sudden become, you know, change my whole outlook culturally. So, however, living in this country for this amount of time, you can't be helped but being heavily influenced by it. So I'm sort of a hybrid in a sense. And I see myself also kind of more as international. My focus is sort of being in this country as an immigrant, but also being from Europe and stuff, and sort of like looking at the world kind of in that kind of manner. So, in fact, I have a big painting show coming up in my hometown, Haarlem, next month. So
Haarlem in the Netherlands.
The Netherlands,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh, good. So what drew you to the All Naturel exhibit?
Well, I knew, you know, Royal Nebeker like years and years ago, and I've shown here over the years quite a few times, and so I also really like to draw and occasionally, you know, draw figures. I paint portraits, and so it seemed like, you know, occasionally I have, not very often, but occasionally I paint a nude figure, and so as I found out about it, a couple of years ago, I submitted some works to it, and then I had like three paintings in it. So, yeah.
So as the juror, you received 561
images on a computer.
Yeah. Very hard to tell really what they look like or going to look like when you see them.
Exceedingly difficult.
And how many did you whittle it down to?
Well, I didn't really want to. Yeah, I know there was, you know, there's a limited amount of time, and I really don't like shows which are overhung. So I knew that I had to reduce it down considerably. And so, but, you know, it sort of led its own way. I have a critical eye, and I looked for. I didn't really look at it as a program that I had sort of like, you know, some other element, some political element, or some kind of, you know, statement about gender, or that. I really primarily looked at quality work, but, you know, it was drawn. I have to draw a figure. I think it should be drawn well. It should have the feet on it. The hand, it should be able to, it should look like well drawn. That was sort of quality, was kind of a, you know, important criteria, and that sort of took care of a lot of it. And then I, you know, my tendency, if you draw, you know, the human figure, it's, you know, this is basically making paintings of people. So it's a humanist form, and it's as old as time. It is just, you know, the human form has been portrayed since, you know, times immemorial, basically. The Venus of Willendorf, you know, like, so like 40,000 years ago.
Right.
So, and especially nowadays with conceptual art and so many, you know, explosions in the art world going off in all kinds of directions, and the drawing and the figure drawings being somewhat marginalized and being critiqued a great deal, and sometimes galleries don't even want to show it. There's all these sort of issues on it, both on the right and the left. There's always kind of, so the fact that this show exists here in Astoria, I mean, it's also really extremely special and unique, and there aren't really that many exhibitions of its nature around, and the fact that it's international, and there's a number of people actually here who are not out of the United States or participating. Yeah, I think it's just a really wonderful thing, and the college is really very nice. They have a wonderful program. It's a really great gallery. And it's just altogether extremely sympathetic. And I think that out of all these works, to be able to pull out this exhibition and have it hang together and look actually viewable, I think that is just, came out good. Come and see it.
It did. Everyone come and see it. And so any of Carol's listeners to Arts Live and Local will be aware, or anybody interested in the arts here on the north coast of Oregon, the southwest coast of Washington, will be familiar with artist Robert Paulman, who's also here in the studio today and has a piece in this exhibit. And Robert, you have a vibrant social media life. You post a lot on Facebook, and you do a lot of sketches of people, both in the nude and clothed. Your piece that's in this exhibit is really quite beautiful. When did you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Well, I enjoy doing the nude and doing figure drawing and painting, but it's not something I prioritize through the year. And Kristen is always kind of encouraging me to get something, you know, when I go up on Fridays and try to get something ready for the show. And I really decided this year I was going to pay attention to that. And with what was going on with the Me Too movement over the past few years and finding out how many women I know through social media and personally that have been abused and injured emotionally and physically in relationships, I wanted to do something that had a little bit more to it than just a classical nude. So I wanted to portray that.
If I may say that it's a woman sitting sort of casually on a big red couch. Mm-hmm. Did you choose red purposefully because of the Me Too movement? And
I wanted to use the contrast in the figure, but when the model and I were searching around the studio for a pose, and I just kept moving that little couch around, and then I backlit it, and the strength of the backlighting in it was what really kind of drew me into that section. But we took the pose, and it reminded me of something, and I couldn't quite pull it out of my memory. And as I looked through my books at home, there's a watercolor painting at the Musée d'Orsay, France, in Paris, by Manet, Edouard Manet, and it's called Christ and the Angels. And it's, you know, he's taken down from the cross and he's just kind of laying on in there in that pose. And subconsciously, that was the thing I grabbed onto. And I thought it was really appropriate for what we were trying to look at in the painting, the domestic violence and the women's problems that have been going on.
It's quite striking. It would really be lovely. I don't know how many paintings there are up, 50 to 100, something like that. It seems like, no, nothing like that?
We lost a couple due to the expense of shipping. I think we're down to 39 or 40
yeah,
pieces.
That's sort of what I'm
I think it's 39, 40.
I didn't really want any more. So the show is not, it's really nice to look at.
It really is. Now that you tell me it's 39, I think, 50 to 100 would be ridiculous.
Normally we do. Yeah. And our very first show, Royal was our very first judge, and he chose over 70. We had pieces everywhere, even up in the Clare Story area. It was fun.
This is really beautifully hung, and there is space between each space to think about what you've seen and what you're about to see. It's really quite nice.
And I'd like to add one thing, though. It's really an honor to be in the show. To be selected out of so many paintings from around the country and the world. It's very, very special.
Right. Kristen, do you want to introduce your newest gallery assistant with the force? David, want to step up to the microphone a little bit?
Hello, yeah, I'm up to the mic.
So lucky to have David on board with us. He is actually a board member at PNCA. He's on the board at Mary Hill Museum, and he's been such a great force here. I'll let him say a few words.
Well,
tell us, first of all, what PMCA is. Remind us what PMCA is.
Pacific Northwest College of Art. Mm-hmm. It's in Portland, mm-hmm. and I've been with them on the board for, God, since 2003, maybe. I've seen a lot of art. I'm an artist, so being relatively new in this area and working with Kristen has been an incredible exposure to, wow, there's a lot going on in Astoria, and this college with this gallery is freaking unbelievable, and I would encourage everybody to go see this show. And I've seen a lot of shows, and this is just, I was there to help unpack and log all the artwork as it came in, and it's like, you know, it's a Christmas morning. Every time you open a pack or box, it's like, oh my God, this is phenomenal. And some of the, just some of the background of some of the artists is fascinating, and where they're coming from. And I can't say enough. So this has been a wonderful experience.
Well, there's some really fine drawings and prints in it, like even small pieces, but really, really extraordinary.
Etchings. And so it's black and white and color. And I would say you have to come up and see there's one that in particular that is all in fluorescent paint, which it blows your mind. But then you contrast it with a very small, you know, etching or drawing like Hank just said, and it's like a really very varied media is all over.
It's all over. Yeah,
it's wide-ranging.
Yeah, wide-ranging.
Yeah, it works. What I tried to sort of look for was not like pretty pictures, but more, you know, works which had some kind of gravitas, some kind of sense of humanity and some kind of deeper sense about, you know, because being a nude, being clothesless is also a kind of, you make yourself really very vulnerable too. So it has to do with vulnerability and being open, but also possibility of being hurt and damaged. And so it has a I tried to look for work which had a kind of emotional power, in a sense.
Hank,
however, that colorful nude,
was
like, that was so extreme. we should include that.
Let me ask Hank and Robert, except for the ones, there are some whimsical pieces in there, But when you have a piece like Robert's, your piece, and many of the others there, you talk about the model is vulnerable. Does the artist have to have a certain vulnerability as well to paint these well?
Well, for me, you know, I think it's an intimacy that you develop over the course of working with someone. And, you know, so you have to, there's a lot of respect that has to develop between the two of you because there's a big trust issue. There are many times when I'll see someone or meet someone and ask them if they would be interested in modeling, and I have never met them before. And then if they are willing, then you have to develop a really great rapport with them. And so there's a lot of trust issues. And over time, you get to care a great deal. And so the exposure is there as well. So,
all right. Well, let's end by Kristen. Tell us again how long the exhibit is open, and when are you giving out the prizes? When will the winners be announced? Any other details like that? Thanks.
The show will be up on the walls through March 12th. Our reception will be held February 20th. That's a Thursday at 6 p.m., and that is when we will be making our announcements for first, second, third prizes, which Hank will choose. And then we also have a solo show award that we're going to be announcing and some purchase awards that we will purchase for our permanent collection that's been growing over the years.
Okay. Well, congratulations, everyone, on really a beautiful exhibit. Thank you very much for being here today. Hank Pander, Robert Paulman, Kristen Schock, David Savinow. And we'll see you up at the college. Our next guest is Shelby Silver. She's exhibiting at Astoria Visual Arts Center for the Arts. Between now and then, we're going to listen to a tune from Kina Lynn Muir. She's playing tonight at Pickled Fish up in Long Beach. Well, we're going to hear Keena Lynn Muir's tune next after we talk to artist Shelby Silver. Welcome, Shelby.
Hi.
Let me see. Let's get your microphone up. There you go. Shelby is going to be exhibiting at the Astoria Visual Arts Center for the Arts beginning tomorrow night during Second Saturday Art Walk, 5 to 8 p.m. I just had an opportunity to drop by and see that you were hanging and, yeah. and displaying.
Yeah, doing the
inside. Shelby, you have a really interesting background. You call yourself not so much an artist. What do you call yourself?
I refer to myself as an ecological artist.
And what do you mean by that?
I focus on marine conservation through the removal of plastic marine debris. And this exhibit is focusing on ecological rehabilitation through art. And I pull plastic marine debris from the ocean, and then I reform it and reshape it into educational pieces.
Where do you collect? Is it beachside? Do you have a fisherman friend that, or perhaps you are
both.
One yourself?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
it's both. Yeah, I spend a lot of time scavenging the beaches, our local beaches, and we'll find small bits of plastic marine debris that I then incorporate into my work, and then I also partner with Westport Marina, Oregon Parks and Recreation, Foul Weather Trawl, and pull in the marine rope.
Right.
And ghost netting. And
the
so
lines,
forth.
The ropes.
Yes.
You exhibited it at AVA several months ago, and there was a very large exhibit. It was probably, six by 2 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was not hung. It was on the ground, and it looked like a collection of baskets, actually, of
yes.
sorts.
What
did you call that?
That was my goose, whale, acorn exhibit, the visual story of a barnacle.
Mm-hmm.
And I had so much fun putting that together. So all of my basket sculptures are hand-knotted and woven, and they're just, it's such an organic unfolding to this.
On your website, you sign off on your homepage, yours in unified stewardship.
Mm.
What do you mean by that?
So I grew up in Grays Harbor, Washington, on the beach. And my mom and dad really instilled these beautiful stewardship values in me to appreciate our ocean and our forests and the salt of earth and sea, which is my studio.
The salt of earth and sea
salt
is your
earth
studio?
Sea
is that what
I
call your
studio?
Where
yeah.
is your studio?
It's in Banks, the Banks Manning area, mm-hmm. right off of 26. And I have an indoor studio and outdoor studio so that I can work on my larger pieces. But those stewardship values really... they really come and are inspired by my mom teaching me to leave some for the earth. So she was an amazing gardener and a farmer growing up, and she would teach me that when I'm picking flowers, leave some for the earth. And I didn't know what that meant when I was a little girl to a large extent until I got much older. And then I realized, oh, of course, the seeds, right? If we leave them, they will reseed themselves and then grow again. And so I always felt the need to preserve and protect.
To be a steward.
Absolutely.
You also, you talk about Thoreau and, which is kind of an obvious choice, but also Frank Herbert of Dune.
Mm-hmm.
And how does Frank Herbert of Dune touch you or inspire you?
I loved his description on ecology, and I feel so obviously called to Thoreau for so many reasons, and just
did you read him in school early on?
No, I actually it was much later. much later mm-hmm. that I stumbled upon.
Well, how long have you been an ecological artist?
You know, I used to refer to myself as an environmental artist, and as my work shifted and as I grew and tried new things, I really wanted to I felt that there were some drier environmental ties, and I wanted to sort of spark this juiciness, and I felt that my work was really more of this ecological capacity and really speaks to the intertwining of our role on this planet. And I knew that that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm helping to heal our ocean and our earth.
Well, it's certainly good timing for this, your art. Do you recall the first piece of PMD that you thought, oh, this could make art?
Yes, I was talking with a good friend of mine, Emily Miller, the other day, who is also another amazing artist who works with plastic marine debris. And I was saying, gosh, you know, I remember my first haul. I remember laying it out on my table.
Start from the beginning. Where did you get it? How did you get it?
Sure. I was in Cannon Beach, and I walked down my little street. This is when I lived in Cannon, and I saw all of these bits and pieces of plastic, and I knew that I had always wanted to work with it, and I had started collecting, and I had these bits and pieces, and I was trying to determine what it was that I was going to do. But before I knew what I was going to create with them, I pulled them off the beach and would wash them and sort them into different pieces on my counter and lay them out and felt inspired by that.
Yeah. Okay, so you're exhibiting at AVA beginning tomorrow, and it's through February 8th, I believe. I mean, it's March 8th, the first Sunday in March. And where else have you exhibited? What's next for Shelby Silver?
Oh, gosh. Well, I was recently accepted to Naropa Institute in Colorado, and I will be creating my own field of psychology in ecology. So I will be a psychologist specializing in ecological art.
No kidding. And so do you already have a background in psychology, a BA or something?
I do not. No. So I will be working on that when I get over there.
How will you include art into the psychology of ecology?
I'm discovering that as I go along right now. I just know that I feel called deeply and intend to bring the ocean to Colorado.
Right. What are your concerns in particular? I mean, there's so many today, but what is your particular concern is probably ocean acidification, ocean just garbage.
You know, I think a lot about how our Earth is being affected by the plastic marine debris, our oceans are largely being affected, and it is astonishing to think about. And I think, and this is where I really want to shift the narrative through my work, we have had a tendency to look at this situation with fearful eyes because it's a scary thing, right, to see this ocean full of plastic and know it's working its way up the food chain. And so I come in, and this is where my work really, really speaks with its heart and shares that if we begin to shift our perspective and look at the situation through the eyes of love, then we can begin to really problem solve in a higher capacity. Fear is really constricting and love is really expanding. And when we step into that place and look through the eyes of love, then we can really make a difference, and in collaboration as well.
I can see how you would want to be a psychologist or to be studying psychology. And I think it will be very, very interesting to see how your art evolves. Since it is so close to your heart, I feel certain that it will stay with you as you go through your studies in Naropa. But it would be very interesting to see how it evolves when you're so far away from the ocean.
Yes.
And when your main influence are these majestic mountains.
Yes. My plan is to return to our area and start my practice here. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I want to pursue my master's after Naropa. And I'm really focusing on this new project that is being unveiled at AVA tomorrow. And that is my Earth Temple series. And that one allows me to utilize so many more pieces of plastic marine debris and exhibit our Earth as this beautiful beautiful temple, so to speak.
Well, we have been talking about plastic marine debris, and so it sounds like pretty nasty stuff. But Shelby Silver makes really beautiful things out of not just plastic marine debris, but also more organic materials like the lines and the ropes that you see, and the colors are just wonderful, subtle, beautiful palettes, and I think you'll love them. And Shelby is exhibiting with another artist, Duncan Barry,
yes,
who does, I'm going to mess this up, Gyotaku prints. They're mm-hmm. like fish prints, but they're not, you know, basic salmon fish prints that many people in, mm-hmm. in our neck of the woods have seen. He uses real octopus and devilfish and other things that we haven't seen. They're
so
quite
beautiful.
Extraordinary. So the two of you go really beautifully together.
Thank you.
That is opening tomorrow night, 5 o'clock, 5 to 8 o'clock, opening reception. Shelby will be there, and you can talk to her more at AVA Center for the Arts. That's at 10th and Duane in yeah. downtown Astoria. Thank you so much for being with
Thank
us today,
Shelby.
Thank
you so much Shelby. For having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, now we indeed are really going to hear a cut from Kina Lynn Muir's new CD. Kina Lynn is she's playing at the Picklefish tonight. Here we go.
In the slow lane, driving that Lost Coast Highway Sunday, 5 a.m. down where the people smile, hang around for a little while, then they move on. When the kids leave home, white as the ocean, blue as the sky, ever wonder why? Wonder why?
And I don't know about going home, but I know about you. I know about you.
Down to the riverside, driftwood rolls and the pebbles slide, river's looking wide. Today, feel like the ocean, hands like the sky, river's twice as wide. Other side, no one goes to California. No one stays, but don't say that I didn't try to warn you. But it never pays. It never pays, and I don't know. Thank you.
hospital is up ahead. Maybe they got an empty bed where I can rest my head. Tonight, someplace clean and white, without a single neon light to make me wonder why. I'm blue as the sky, and I don't know about going home, but I know.
So that's Keena Lynn Muir. She'll be playing at Pickled Fish tonight and first Fridays and Saturdays for a while at Pickled Fish up in Long Beach, Washington. That tune was called Lost Coast Highway, and the CD is Twisted Whistle, Through the Mill. Okay, thank you. And now we have in studio with us Northwest Noggin and Chilean artist and educator Cecilia Araneda. And with Northwest Noggin, we have Bill Greiser and Jeff Leek. That's right. Hello and welcome. Thank you for coming. I think we should probably introduce what Northwest Noggin is first, and then you can say how Cecilia is associated with you and why you have brought all these brains into this studio, other than the fact that I could certainly use a few. So, Bill Greiser, why don't you go first?
So my name is Bill Greiser, and my colleague Jeff and I actually like to take, you know, real brains and also 3D printed brains and also, neurons that are crafted out of pipe cleaners into schools, into correctional facilities, into homeless youth centers, and also into coffee shops and to pubs. So we've been to the Fort George before. We were just recently at both Warrenton and Astoria High Schools. And Cecilia is a really good friend of ours from Chile. And she, actually her husband that we met because David, right, actually worked at OHSU for a year. And he's a neuroscientist. And actually, Chile has a tremendous history of neuroscience research because there is an organism called the giant squid, the Humboldt squid, that has enormous neurons. I mean, you can see the actual axonal wires. So they were very useful for figuring out how, you know, our brains transmit information electrically. And it's also got a tremendous art tradition. So Chile, Valpo is a wonderful kind of fusion of both art and sciences, which is what we love as well.
And so how did you get involved with all of this, Cecilia?
From a very different point of view. Yes. Hi, thanks a lot for inviting me. And I'm here to talk about arpilleras. But to talk about arpilleras, we need to talk a little bit about history, memory, and also the role that women have in that in these topics, no?
Let me just introduce. You're saying pilleras?
Arpilleras.
What is that?
I will let you know soon. Okay. it's a little bit complicated
okay.
to explain.
No, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure I had heard it properly. It is one word, arpilleras.
Exactly.
Okay, thank
arpilleras.
You. Okay.
So back in the 70s in Chile, we democratically elected the first socialist leader in Chile, who was Salvador Allende. So at that time of Cold War, Salvador Allende was not good for the United States, neither for the right wing in Chile. So they managed, they unite forces, and they managed to put him out, overthrown by a dictatorship that was really cruel, mean, who killed many people, disappeared many others, torture, etc. And that that repression was mainly for men, because at that time women were not very involved in political parties or working outside the house. So these women were left alone with sadness But not only sadness, but also they were completely poor because the man was usually in charge of bringing the money home. So they were so sad that there were some institutions who helped them to overcome that period, that feeling. And an artist of the time taught them how to express what was happening to them through arpilleras. So what they did, they told the story in a kind of embroidery, I would say, maybe a tapestry where they, like, this is a very simple one. Mm-hmm. Can you see that? This is a new one, mm-hmm. But in old times they work the same way.
It's a bit like a needlepoint.
Exactly. They use old fabrics, and they use wool from they woven clothes. They unwoven.
They unwove clothes.
They were completely poor, so right. With that they did this part, and right. With old clothes they told.
So
the
they
stories.
Unwove. They unwove the clothes
exactly.
So they could use it as a thread.
Exactly.
Yes.
And with used clothes of their families. They told the stories of what was happening to them. So it's very important because they make memory of what was happening until now, because these arpilleras are actually now in museums. They are exhibited around the world. Mm-hmm. So our teacher, Maria Alicia Salinas, she was in prison at that time also, and she told us that they did an arpillera workshop in jail, and many foreign people came to these organizations and also to the prisons to see people, and they were very interested in buying them. Mm. So that was a very important moment for these women, because in one way it was so sad to sell them. They had personal feelings with this. But in that way, they got money to support their families. No? They were in charge of their families. So after many years, we realized that the people who write the official history usually want to erase those part of the history. So Maria Alicia and a group of women got together and they say, no, we have to make memory about all these places that were used to violate human rights. So that's the way they started in 2016. Yeah. And I entered the group in 2017, and our purpose is to do arpilleras of all the places that were used to violate human rights. Not to forget what happened to us, and not to forget the pain of all the people who suffered at that time and who are still suffering, looking for their people who never appeared. You know that we have more than 1,000 people disappear until nowadays. So this is what we have been doing. I brought them, and they are going to be tomorrow. Sorry. They are going to be tomorrow in Street 14 Cafe.
Street 14 in their private room, which will be open to the public.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know, but we also have a new outburst, outburst,
yeah.
That
Chile.
Started
political.
In Chile. Yeah. In Chile,
yes.
People, we are fed up with the neoliberal system. You know that in Chile with the coup, they sold everything. Our water is private. All our water is private, so our rivers are traded in the stock market. Can you imagine that? Mm. So people are totally fed up with this, and everybody is in the streets fighting for our rights. So in a way, we leave our sight and memory projects aside, and we are now portraying what is happening to us now. So I brought you this. No?
No, so, okay. It says, no estamos en guerra, estamos unidos.
Exactly.
So, and translate that for us.
Okay. The actual government there is from the right too, and I can say that is not my president because I didn't vote for him, but he's ruling Chile with a 6% of approbation of people. Nobody likes him, but he's there. And he, as soon as he saw all these people in the streets, he said, we are in a war against terrible people. And these terrible people are us that are fighting for our rights. So when he said that we were at war, we were completely astonished. We couldn't believe that a president can say that he's in a war against us.
I can relate, yes.
So we say, no, we are not at war. We are united against you. No, that's different. So when I hear that, when I hear him saying that we were at war, I couldn't believe. I said, and that's why I started this arpillera with the sign. This
yes.
was the first part I did. And we're still there. We're still fighting. There are people in the streets suffering a lot. We have the policemen are terrible, and they are acting more or less the same way they acted during the dictatorship. Now we have 30 people dead. We have more than 4,000 people who has injured in their eyes because policemen are just shooting them at their eyes.
Rubber bullets
or mm-hmm. tear gas. We have some people who has lost completely their vision. Mm-hmm. And, we are in a moment, in a pretty difficult moment. No?
Jeff Leek, are you able to connect this movement in Chile and the arpilleras with N.W. Noggin?
So part of what we do when Bill and I go out is we like to teach through making, and so we spend a lot of time with whoever we're with, schools, kids, or even adults, sitting down and actually making and we'll make things like we brought some neurons made out of pipe cleaners or drawing or all sorts of other sort of activities. But we'll sit down and we'll tell stories often, they're useful as an education tool, but they're also a way to help us communicate with each other. And I think these arpilleras in particular, they're really about that sense of
right.
communicating, that.
Cecilia, are you still living in Chile and you're taking this exhibit around the United States? Or?
No. I'm just, I was invited by a very good friend besides this good friend, a Mexican friend who is a teacher at Middlebury College. And she has been in Chile and she knows our work. So she's teaching a class, Latin America and resistance and resistencia. So the first part is about what happened in Chile back in the 70s, and we will finish that part of her class with an exhibition of the arpilleras and a speech that I'm going to do. And, a part very important of our work is to difundir, to talk about this everywhere we can.
Disseminate the
information.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we think that we have certain things in common. We also work with trauma,
yeah.
and how to overcome. Now, this is a very healing process also.
Right.
Can I just say, so we're going to have
yes.
like those brains, we're going to have information yeah. about research on trauma, on stress, how it impacts the brain, how we can be quite resilient and how to promote resilience. And there's significant research on the role of art, the ability to sort of have expression and actually trying to, tell your story, to sort of make connections and communicate, as Jeff mentioned, and recover from these sorts of experiences. And also to create memories that, others can know. So. Mm-hmm.
Really fascinating. Another, just another great exhibit that is not, it is art that informs, educates, entertains, which is really some of the best art.
And also, I think it's very important to have the chance to see the history of those who are never in the books, no?
Yes, absolutely. And also, I'm sure that you know that American media, whether it's right, left, there's very little center left, but it just really focuses on what is going on in the United States. And you have to really look to find information about what's going on in the world. We're so obsessed with our own traumas here.
Mm-hmm.
And so thank you so much, Cecilia Araneda, for bringing this to our little town, Astoria, and to the north coast of of Oregon and the southwest coast of Washington. It's great to have you here. It's tomorrow at Street 14 Cafe, which is 14th and Commercial in Astoria. Thank you very much, and good luck to you and your people in Chile.
Thanks a lot, and I also would like to thank all my friends who are there and who allowed me to be here with all their arpilleras also.
I bet they're listening, and thank you also, Bill Greiser and Jeff Leake from
Northwest
Oregon.
Thank you. Yeah.
Well, thank you. We are going to hear now a little bit from the Hackles. We just have a few minutes left, and then I'm going to go through the community calendar to try to tell you as much as I can about all of the many events that are going on around the area this weekend.
Was a sharp December morn. I had a bite of the killing kind, and his arms were as bare as a manzanita tree, and he just didn't seem to mind.
Well, also going on around the region this weekend and next week, the Resoelectrics will be performing at the Hoffman Center for the Arts in Manzanita this Saturday, beginning at 7 o'clock p.m. They'll be playing both acoustic and electric sets, and this is an all-ages event. The Nehalem Valley Historical Society will have a presentation titled Blacks in Oregon, 1840 to 1870, with Lane Sawyer, reference manager for the Oregon State Archives. The presentation will be on Saturday, tomorrow, beginning at 3 o'clock p.m. at the Pine Grove Community House in Manzanita, Oregon. Auditions for Astor Street Opry Company's production of The Real Lewis and Clark Story are coming up Monday and Tuesday, February 10th and 11th, at the ASOC Playhouse in Astoria. Many, many things going on, including Pacific Story Slam, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Mondays at Maggie's on the Prom in Long Beach, Wednesdays at Workers Tavern in Astoria, and Mondays at North Beach Tavern in Long Beach, Wednesdays at Workers Tavern in Astoria, and Thursdays at Maggie's on the Prom in Cannon Beach. Thank you so much for joining me, Cindy Price, for Arts Live and Local. Carol wishes you well, and she'll be back.
Took the coins out of his pocket and dropped them in the shaking car. Who's barely breaking stride to that used to riverbed.
You've been listening to Arts Live and Local on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. Stay tuned for Left, Right, and Center on Coast Community Radio, coming up in just a moment. So I go.